Vibrant
music teaching.
Proven and practical
tips,
strategies,
and ideas
for music teachers.
This is the Vibrant Music Teaching Podcast. I'm Nicola Canton, and today we're diving into 17 different method books for a bumper overview. There are so many piano method books out there right now. You might be wondering which one is right for you and your student. Well, today I'm going to go through 17 different piano methods. No, this is not all of them. It's not an exhaustive list, but 17 methods that I have right here in front of me so that we can look at some of the key differences and when and why you might use particular ones. I've been teaching for over 20 years, so this is not every method I've ever used, but they are all the ones I have on hand right now, and it's going to give you a good overview so that if you pick up a new method that's not on this list, you can think about, how do I think about this? How do I assess it? How do I compare it to what else is out there? And maybe if your favorite method is on this list, you'll be able to see how it compares to other methods and whether you agree with what I think of it. So we've got a lot to get through, but before we dive in, I want to do a little call out, okay? If you are watching this video and you are a self-learner, like you're an adult who's learning piano for themselves, good on you, but this is not really going to help you. None of these should be used without a teacher. So if you comment saying, which of these can I use without a teacher? My answer is going to be get a teacher. I'm so sorry, but that is the true, honest answer that I have for you. With that being said, teachers who are still here, let's dive in. I'm going to start with John Thompson. I had to pick some kind of order for this video, and I chose John Thompson first simply because this is where it all began for me. Not where I began teaching. This is where I began learning. My first teacher used John Thompson, and hey, I'm still here today, so it must have done something right. So if you haven't come across John Thompson before, wow, that's shocking, but I don't think it's as popular in some parts of the world as it is here, and I'd say in the UK, maybe in Australia a little bit too. I've heard about teachers using it, but it is ubiquitous. There's still many teachers who use John Thompson with their students to this day. Why has it lasted so long? What's it all about? John Thompson is one of the original methods. It's been around a really long time in different iterations, but it stood the test of time for sure. There's something though that stops me from using it now, so I want to get that right away out there. To be clear, I don't ever use John Thompson, and that's because it focuses on a middle C position for quite a long time. And I just don't like that. It doesn't suit my teaching. I don't really agree with it. I've talked at length about why I don't like it in the past, so I won't bore you with it here. But I don't like it. I don't like it when the thumbs share C. For one song, sure, fine with it. That's grand. But not on an ongoing basis, not for a whole book or more. So that's why I don't love John Thompson. I learned from it myself, so I have certain baggage attached to John Thompson that maybe isn't super helpful and doesn't make me the most objective. What is John Thompson good at? Well, I think it is good at having a steady reading progression. It doesn't baby students too much, which is where I think some teachers who are diehard John Thompson people and don't like newer methods, they feel they're a little bit too babying. The progression is not steep enough. So it is a relatively steep progression with John Thompson. Not crazy, not like, you know, you're meant to play a sonata on day one, but it's relatively steep. And that is true of most older method books, because my hypothesis is students were expected to practice more than they are currently expected to practice. So yes, it's a little bit steeper. And I got a comment about this when I talked about John Thompson in the past, because I called the music boring. And someone was like, hey, I don't like John Thompson, but the one thing I could say about it is the music's actually pretty good. I agree with you in the later books. There's actually some really good pieces in the later books. I don't like the beginning music. That's what I meant by that comment. So yes, it gets better, but because of that steep progression, as a student, which is the main perspective I can give you since I don't use this in my teaching, as a student, by the time I got to the interesting music, I felt like it was impossible to play because I felt like it didn't absorb the stuff going onwards. And that's not entirely down to the method, right? We get that. But I felt like the beginning pieces were boring. And then the nicer sounding stuff was just overwhelming. So that's how it can feel, but maybe if I didn't have emotional baggage attached to John Thompson, I would probably use the later books as repertoire books with some students. I've considered looking into that, trying to question my own biases. Maybe I'll do that as a project in the future. But yeah, like from book 3, I think, from memory on, the music's actually pretty good. So I can see using them as a repertoire book, but I don't like the progression of them as a method book. As with all of these, you do you. I'm not saying you're a bad teacher if you teach out of this method. That's never what I'm saying. Next, we're going to dive into the Piano Adventures universe. And I've kept these books together back to back so that we can see how they fit together. Same with other major publishers who do like different versions of the same books, basically. So the first one in my Piano Adventures list is My First Piano Adventures. This is their younger beginner book. Now, if you look inside, it says it's for ages 5 to 6. And I think it's often recommended for students who are much younger than that. And I think that's where it can go wrong. At times, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, that's not what they meant, as far as I'm aware, as far as what they've written and what I've heard them say about it, by young beginner. And a young beginner has gotten younger and younger over the time I've been teaching, like what counts as a young beginner. I think 5 or 6 in many parts of the world is actually pretty standard now. It's not considered that young, whereas it used to be standard to start at age 8. Like, that was the perception when I started teaching first. So, My First Piano Adventures, it is a slower pace than their regular series. Basically, what it does is, that was book A I was showing you there. So, book A, B, and C are the equivalent of the primer in the regular series, which we'll look at in a second. So you're splitting into 3 books of almost the same length, I'd say, as the primer, the same level of concepts or the same required level of playing. So it's a slower pace. Great, makes sense. Here's my take on it. I really like some aspects of My First Piano Adventures, and we still use them in my studio. I have some quibbles, especially with book A and book C. Book B, I really love the most. Book A is great in the second half of the book. But where it falls down for me is that the beginning chunk of the book, if you follow it as it is, you can mix it up. You're a teacher, you get to decide what you do, right? But if you follow it as it is, I feel like there's not enough actual piano playing until you're halfway through the book. So if you were actually to do each activity they suggest thoroughly, all the way through, I feel like you don't get to a real piece until Twinkle Twinkle. And for me, that's too far into the book. So that's my only quibble with it. But if you mix up the order and do things slightly differently, it can work great. And different teachers will have different preferences. Book B then is on the staff. And I love that it's really big notation and that a lot of the pieces are actually pretty good. Sure, it starts with like a C, 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 C kind of piece, as a lot of method books do. But it quickly progresses from there. And the backing tracks really sell those pieces. They're really fun to play with the backing tracks. I love that about them. In book B, there's basically 2 hand positions going on the majority of the time. There's a side-by-side middle C, I'll call it, the one that I don't hate too much, where your right hand thumb is on C and your left hand thumb is on B. So they're not overlapping. That's for a lot of the pieces. And then the other one is a little bit of a what we generally call a C position, where your left hand 5 is on C and right hand 1 is on C. So it does have the danger warning of students can get stuck thinking in positions and can start to think of certain numbers as notes. So I have had students who are in My First Piano Adventures B who, when you ask them what note is this, they will say 2 for D. Okay, so it does have that danger. A lot of method books do, though, and that's not like they failed because they did this. I'm just saying you have to watch out for that. You have to teach in a way that doesn't let them think that way. And that's where games and other stuff comes in, right? This is just the reading material. Now, I said I had a quibble with book C as well. My quibble with book C is that it's kind of too hard. No, it's that the music isn't as good as book B in terms of today's students connecting with it. Some of it's really good. Some of the pieces are kind of duds, in my view. Sorry. But yeah, that's kind of how I feel about them. And the other thing is the backing tracks really get quite fast. So if we say that the student is, let's say, still 5 or they've just turned 6, it's really quite tough for them to play with the backing tracks unless they practice a lot. If they practice a lot, great. They'll be able to do it. But, you know, it would take a lot of time for a student to be able to play with those backing tracks at their speed that they're at. So for me, you can't use those as much. Some of them work great, some don't. I go into this in super detailed detail in our courses about these books. I have Peace Pointers courses in our membership about these books specifically. And Peace Pointers courses are where I talk about each piece in a book in detail, how I teach it, what to watch out for and all that stuff. So if you remember, you can go check that out in your Vibrant Music Teaching membership. But basically, yeah, some of the backing tracks are too quick. Otherwise, Fuxi is pretty good, but again, a bit position-based. Moving on to the regular Piano Adventures. So this is the original. This is older than the My First Piano Adventures. And it's meant for a standard age beginner. On the back here, they say it's for ages 6 to 11. And they say My First Piano Adventures is 5 to 6, like I said before. So there's an overlap there. I would take it as... really, this is for ages 7 to 9, in my opinion. I'm narrowing that a bit. But giving an 11-year-old this book, not every 11-year-old, but you know, in many cases, it would be a bit slow and a bit, would feel a bit babyish for them. So anyway, My First Piano Adventures, fairly classic beginner book. It starts with pre-reading pieces. They're just, you know, shown as finger number notation and the notes, but no staff. And then it progresses to reading on staff within that book. As I said before, the idea is that at the end of this, they've ended up at roughly the same level they have at the end of My First Piano Adventures book C, in much less time because they're an older student. I like these books when I want something very vanilla. It's sort of not hugely illustrated, not hugely plain. The music is like not particularly of any special genre. The pieces are accessible. The pacing is fairly gentle. And it works well when I just need something pretty straightforward, which sometimes you do. Nothing wrong with that. So there's not anything that stands out, but there's not anything to hate about it in my view either. The teacher duets are fine. The music is fine. There's nice themes to it. All in all, a solid method. Can't believe I'm saying that about Piano Adventures. Obviously, it's a solid method. It is the most popular, as far as I'm aware, in the world. So yes, it's solid. Next in Piano Adventures land is For the Older Beginner, Accelerated Piano Adventures. So this is book 2. But book 1 exists, obviously. This is really an accelerated version of the main series. Okay, so it has some different material, but a lot of the logic, the pedagogy, the pieces even, are actually from the main series. And then they've put them together slightly differently for a faster pace. And it's meant essentially for teenagers. So it says for the older beginner. You could use it with adults as well, but yeah, basically teenagers and up. So when it says it's accelerated, how accelerated is the question? So book 1 basically takes primer level plus book 1 of the regular series. This is going to get confusing really fast. Stay with me. But the accelerated book 1 is like primer plus book 1 of the regular series. And accelerated book 2 is like 2A plus 2B. So that's not super accelerated. They're not tiny books either. So you're not cutting out that much material, just a little bit, and then restructuring it slightly differently, which I think they do a really good job of, to suit that older beginner student. It's still a relatively gentle pace. It's not super accelerated, right? It's not actually that demanding of the student, but it is better suited to that older beginner student. I tend to use this mostly with teenage beginners who sort of don't really know what they want. If I have someone who comes to me with a very specific goal in mind, I'll pick a more specific method that I think takes them in that direction. But if they're like, oh, I don't know what music I like, I don't know what I want to do, I don't really know why I'm learning piano, all that stuff, then Accelerated Piano Adventures is an absolutely classic choice. After that, we have a beast. Adult Piano Adventures. Now, this is something I think that the Piano Adventures universe does well, actually. Adult Piano Adventures is a bigger book than Accelerated Piano Adventures. And I said Accelerated is primarily for teens. I would tend to use it with teens and like younger adults in their 20s, maybe 30s, not so much older adults. If they're an older adult and I was choosing from the Piano Adventures book, I would go for the adult one because it's slower. adults can't always move faster. That's not really how it works, but you do need something that's directed toward them. You don't want to give them super childish music in like the landscape format and all those things that kind of make you think you're being babied a little bit. That's where Adult Piano Adventures is useful because, yes, it moves faster with some things like theory, but it doesn't move too much faster technically. And for an older adult, and I don't really mean older, like I'm talking about like my age basically, and older than that, anything sort of out of the 20s, because when you're still in your early 20s especially, you still have that capacity that teenagers have for just like picking up new physical skills very quickly. And when you get older than that, I'm sorry, but it's harder to do. It just is. And so that's why Adult Piano Adventures is actually slower than Accelerated. And I think that's as it should be. It does a pretty good job of balancing repertoire that they mostly tend to be interested in. The exception with my students being some of the like American, super American ones, but like that's fair enough. It's an American method, so we can skip over those. But it's a pretty good, steady progression that helps adults feel like they have a good pace going on. By the way, if you have an adult student who's in that method or in another one, but you have an adult student who is interested in popular music, they have an Adult Piano Adventures popular collection that's actually very good and especially good for your older adult students. They'll generally recognize all the songs in it or most of them, and the arrangements are really solid. Next up, we have a little bit of a wild card option, maybe not as known, still popular for sure. That's Keith Snell's piano course for the adult beginner. I picked this up when I was at a conference and we've been using it with an adult student of ours. I'd say it leans more towards the classical end, which can be great for some adults. And it does explore technique in a more methodical way than, say, Adult Piano Adventures, in my opinion. It's a little bit drier than something like Adult Piano Adventures. But that can actually be a good thing for some adult students who just want to get down to business, get to the things, learn the things, and they have that studious mindset where they just want to sit down with something and learn things in a very systematic manner. Keith Snell's course can be really good for that type of a student. It definitely includes a lot more theory pages, scales, things like that. So it is more in depth, more holistic, in a more traditional way, but I don't mean that as a negative. I don't mean old-fashioned, but it is more traditional, foundational skills to go really far with music if that's what your adult student wants to do. Next, we're entering a different universe, Piano Pronto. This is newer maybe on the scene. I feel like pretty well known at this stage, but there's still some people who haven't heard of it. They're not always carried in all major bookshops. It's a more independent company, not under a major publisher, although we could consider a major publisher by now, I feel like, with the catalog that they have at pianopronto.com. So Jennifer Eklund is the one behind this, and this is my representation of the whole main method for Piano Pronto. So this is movement one. It is not the first one. As with many method books, movement one is sort of the second one because there's usually a primer that comes first. So this is the part that can get confusing about Piano Pronto. And in case you are new to it or you haven't grasped this, I'll just clarify this first. There are two things that come before movement one. Basically, in the main series, there is keyboard kickoff and prelude. Originally, there was just prelude. I've been around this stuff long enough to remember when keyboard kickoff came out. So originally, there was just prelude, and that led to movement one. And then she brought in keyboard kickoff, which is like an easier start than prelude. It's meant for a younger student, not a preschooler, but a younger student beginner than prelude, which is really, I mean, her method book is designed around an older beginner student, I'd say like 9 and above. Prelude is a classic choice for. But keyboard kickoff is meant for a slightly younger student. It uses note names in the note heads, which prelude only does a little bit. But you can't go keyboard kickoff movement one. You can't really go keyboard kickoff prelude movement one. You're going to want to, if you're doing keyboard kickoff, which I don't really use anymore, but if you are, you would start keyboard kickoff about halfway through it. You would also start prelude and you would overlap them. And then keyboard kickoff would be finished and you'd finish out the second half of prelude. Roughly like that is how you would use them together, in my opinion. I'm not the creator, but that's how I would use them if I was using both. But I prefer just the starting with prelude, maybe. Or generally what I use is movement one and above now, because I usually have other methods that I prefer that cover the areas that prelude would cover. It's not a bad book at all, just how my preferences have shifted. So what's Piano Pronto all about? Well, Piano Pronto has sometimes been called an unmethod by certain people. It is super clean, simple, no colourful illustrations, no extra stuff on the page. Anytime there's an explanation, it's not on the page of the piece. So where in Piano Adventures you'd have like an info box and then this and then that and then all the stuff kind of surrounding the piece, and that's how they fit it all in, Piano Pronto would put that on the page before, most likely, or the page opposite, right? The piece page is simple and plain like you'd find in a repertoire book. It's just the piece, no extra stuff. So that's one thing that's different about it and can be really a great fit for a lot of students. The other thing that Piano Pronto does really well is arrangements of well-known tunes. Not every student is going to know every tune. That's just not realistic, but a lot of them will be familiar. And I really like how in Prelude and a good chunk of Movement 1, a lot of the tunes are like folk tunes. And then she progresses to more classical themes. So like the first piece, I think, in Movement 3 is the Blue Danube, just to give you a reference point. There's a lot of those like, oh, I have heard this before kind of pieces that students will react to. And she does really good arrangements. Jennifer is the master arranger, in my view, especially for translating things into playable but still sounding like the thing for beginners. So this does a great job of that. And it's a super one to explore if you'd like to have something in your arsenal that's simple, free of clutter, especially good for students who get distracted by things, and really good for students who want recognizable tunes. What are the pitfalls? It is position-based. A lot of methods are, you know, that's not throwing shade, that's just how it is. But the danger zone with this one is if your student moves slowly. So again, if they don't practice, let's say, or they're finding things difficult. If they move slowly, they really will get stuck in positions and think in positions. If they move at a good pace and they're practicing, they will be fine. They won't, in my view, in most cases, get stuck in positions. Of course, we need supplemental books to help with that and all that kind of thing. But because the first half of Movement 1, so all of Prelude, as far as I remember, there might be some exceptions to that, but definitely the first half of Movement 1 is all C position, and then the second half we see G position, and then we go to F after that. So it's very much thinking in these blocks, and they do spend a long time in C position. Again, if they move slowly. We don't want them to move slowly. If this is the right fit for them, they'll be eating up these pieces. And that does happen with many students, and that's when it works so well. My final note about Piano Pronto main method is how I use it in my studio. And we do sometimes use it as a standard method, but where we use it the most often, and where it is honestly hard to fill in with a different method, is with transfer students. Because it has that unmethod feel, because it's not very methody, if we need to go back a few levels with a transfer student, it doesn't really feel like that's what we're doing. And they feel like, oh, I'm still playing real music, it's really good, but we can take their reading back to a level that we know they're actually able to read at and fix some issues that might have cropped up from their previous teacher or through them teaching themselves or whatever has happened before. Next in Piano Pronto land is Road Trip. So this comes squarely before the main Piano Pronto method, and it's quite unique. It's quite interesting. So these are meant for younger beginners, and each book goes on a journey. So it's like kind of a continuous story throughout the book, and the songs illustrate that story. So like this one is to the lake, so they go to the lake and they fish or something, and then they're driving home from the lake. Each song is kind of a step on that journey, which is really fun. They are all quite simple pieces, and their line, the sort of tagline is that they can be taught by rote, note, or number. So you get to decide which way you want to teach these pieces. They can just be taught by rote, you can use the finger numbers, you can read the notes. Because they're taking this approach, unlike the main Piano Pronto method, they are not position-based at all. They move all over the place and they show the position to the student on keyboard maps to make them accessible. Some of the pieces are pretty challenging if we have, you know, a young beginner, which is what they're for. Some of the pieces can be pretty challenging for that young beginner, I'll be honest. If we're expecting real mastery of some of those quicker moving pieces, it's probably not going to happen. But where this works is if we don't expect real mastery of every single piece along the way. And we're just kind of like washing music over our student. I sometimes think of it like, you know, we're just gonna come back to these things again and again. We're exploring these concepts. We're finding our way of making music. Where I tend to use Road Trip is as part of a melting pot with a young beginner student. So I'll often add in a Road Trip book if like my student just needs a little bit of something different, or I'll start off in Road Trip if I've been working with them for a couple of weeks without a book, thinking I'd like to add a book, but I'm not set on what I want to use with this kid because of one reason or another that I just like aren't sure which is the best fit. I will start a Road Trip book because it's very easy to use as a supplement. So that's kind of how it fits for me. And there are various Road Trips. I think there's 5. I could be way off on that. There might be 10. Jennifer is prolific, but there are definitely 4 that I know and use in my studio, and they each have a different one of these stories. 2 of them are roughly the same level, and then another 2 are roughly the same level, but they're like all very close in leveling, so that you can go on a little journey, wash the music over your student, go on another little journey, and over time things develop, and especially like dexterity with younger beginners and stuff, they might need a while to adapt to that. So that's what this is great for. The final one we're looking at from Piano Pronto is Fired Up. So this is for the older student. We've had regular student, younger student, now older student. So Fired Up, and like Road Trip, there's nothing else really like this that I could point to. They're very different styles of pieces for a method book. It has that Piano Pronto feeling of like not tons of clutter on the page. The piece is just the piece. There's not illustrations and information and blah, 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 all around the page. Not loads of distracting stuff. So that's different. What's different to the main Piano Pronto series is that these are not familiar tunes. They're like composed by Jennifer. I think they're all originals as far as I remember. And they're all in a specific style which is very appealing to many students. Some students come to us and they want to learn pop music, film music, video game music, those kinds of genres, and yet we need something that's step-by-step progressive, that makes sure we didn't miss any steps on their reading journey and all of that stuff. And so individual pieces don't usually form the whole picture of that, and this is where Fired Up can be really good because it has that feeling to the music. You know, they feel like contemporary styles of music, and it has that natural progression, and it's nice and short too. So if you've got a student like that, they're generally impatient to just get to the real stuff. We don't want a journey of like 6 years with a method book. So there's just 2 levels of Fired Up, and I actually think that's a good thing. It covers the beginnings of reading. You can do other stuff on the side, of course. You're still doing, you know, all the other stuff that needs to be included in a lesson, but it has the reading progression covered, and then, you know, it's 2 levels. You could be done within 9 months if the student is moving nicely through the pieces. Done with the method book, that is. There's still plenty of other music to learn. Okay, next we'll do the biased one. This is my own method, so take any of this with a pinch of salt, I don't mind, and feel free to ask me questions in the comments. My method is called Piano Paint Box, and it is for young students. So there's a level A, B, and C, and the idea is that by the end of C, they'd be able to start level 1 or 2 of most method books, depending on the method books, whether it'd be 1 or 2, because things work differently, but generally around there, and they could fit right in because they'd have the foundations in place. It's for younger beginners, as I said, but you can use it with anyone. I deliberately didn't put like for young students, for preschoolers, whatever, on the cover or anything like that, because I don't want it to be restricted to that. Sometimes we just need something that moves at a gentle pace for any number of reasons with a student. And it doesn't matter what age they are, if they need that gentle pace, that's what they need. Why did I put this out there? I've already talked about other beginner, young beginner methods and, you know, what I like about them, and some of them are really good. What I wanted to exist was, I'll try to be extremely brief about this, and I'll put the link below of the full explanation, the webinar I did about Piano Paint Box, what it's about, foundational pedagogical principles within the books. But briefly, I wanted something that got young beginners playing more. Like, that was my core frustration. And I started creating the method book from not how can I make a child read music, but how can I make a child play music. And that doesn't mean we don't include reading. Reading is an important part of it, and they will learn to read pretty successfully by the end of book C. But the point is, playing is the center for me. Because when we have a young beginner student, The main thing we need to do is get them playing enough and the pieces be simple enough that they can successfully play them so that they develop coordination and dexterity and all these things that are actually standing in the way of their progress. Normally, the reading is often standing in their way because we're asking them to do too much at once. And it's not to say that they can't learn to read or they couldn't learn to read faster than we do in Piano Paint Box, but it comes at the detriment of them being able to play successfully, experience music successfully. And so Piano Paint Box includes improvisation and composing and rote pieces and reading, and it goes at a slower pace without adding fillery, fluffy activities, still with plenty of time at the piano. You all know I believe in time away from the piano too, but we still need to spend enough time at the piano that they're playing enough that it's really a piano lesson. And that's what Piano Paint Box does. Next, we have Piano Safari, which is well documented as one of my favorite piano methods. So you can find me all over the interwebs talking about Piano Safari, how I use it, why I like it. But in case you're new to it, I'll give you a brief overview. So Piano Safari, like Piano Paint Box that I just talked about, my method also includes rote pieces. It includes a little bit of improvisation too, so we have that in common. It's a fantastic method book that is really strong on teaching technique and teaching reading based on intervals and patterns rather than note by note. Not that any other method doesn't do that, but they are very strong on that. The rote pieces that are included are beautiful and rich and so fulfilling for students to play. So as a student moves through level one, there is no primer in Piano Safari, it starts at level one. So a student moves through level one, they start with pre-reading fairly early on. Assuming they're moving at a good pace, they get onto the staff and they're reading by seconds, the next chapter by thirds, the next chapter by seconds and thirds. So it's very logical progression in terms of reading by interval. And in the first book, it just focuses on two landmark notes, and that's the only note names they're expected to know, bass C and treble G. Then in level two, we work on notes all over the staff and they continue to expand their intervals. Level three, the rote pieces disappear. It does have a method book style progression, but it feels a little bit more like a repertoire book than the other two do, I would say. Now, like any method book, it's not perfect for me. Might be exactly perfect for you, but there's very little chance of that. We don't have any method book out there that is perfect for everyone or even perfect for one individual person, because perfect is just unattainable. My only really major qualm with Piano Safari that I don't love, but isn't a deal breaker for me at all, is the use of the single stave. So where we have pieces that are on the grand staff, like there's just the treble clef, just the bass clef. I do feel like that kind of gets in the way of students getting the context of the whole thing, and I would prefer those just had an empty bass clef, which is why that's what I did in Piano Paint Box. Now you might love that, but in my view, for my preferences, I would prefer there always to be both staves so that we can get used to seeing things like that, get used to how things pass from right to left, all that good stuff. Not a deal breaker at all, still a fantastic method, but just something to think about. Also from the Piano Safari world, we have their older student version, Piano Safari for the older student. This follows a lot of the things I said about Piano Safari, so logical reading progression based on intervals, good technique teaching ideas and exercises, and again starts with some pre-reading but moves on to the staff faster, which makes sense for an older student method, and does include rote pieces as well. In the older student version, they rename the technique exercises as just the thing, like fast repeated notes versus kangaroo, which it is in the main method. I get why they did that. I still call it kangaroo with adult students, but that might just be me. But yeah, there's little changes like that to make it feel more sophisticated, more suitable for your teenagers or your adult students. Other than that, it's mostly just moving at a slightly faster pace, especially when it comes to reading, I would say, is the main thing that moves much faster, or a bit faster, in the older student method. So who would I use Piano Safari for the older student for? Because we've talked about other adult and teen method books. Piano Safari for the older student is a fantastic all-around method book. I would tend to gravitate towards this for a student who I can feel that they have an appetite for really diving in and putting in a good bit of practice so that they can move super quick, and that they don't have a strong preference towards popular music because it is more of a classical direction. It doesn't mean all of the pieces are super classical in nature, but it does mean it leans that direction. But other than that, it's a great overall method. You really can't go wrong with it. I would say the pacing in Piano Safari in general, main method and this one, is on the slightly faster end, not John Thompson fast in terms of reading, but on the slightly faster end, and more is expected of students really, which can be a great thing. But if you have a student who puts in zero practice and you soldier your way through book one of Piano Safari, the regular series, say, and then you're getting to the end and thinking, it took us 2 years to finish book one, should we go to book two? I'm afraid my answer is no, go to something easier. Normally, if I have a student in that position, either they're just struggling, they're finding things difficult, or they're just not practicing, most commonly, as the culprit. If they're getting to the end of Piano Safari 1 and they've been somewhat successful but relatively slow with that method, I would tend to switch over to Piano Adventures. Slower pacing, easier wins, better fit for that student. We have 5 method books left, and these are going to be quicker, I promise, because these are ones that I have used less or not used at all. So I'm just going to briefly talk about how I see them fitting in, but take this with a pinch of salt. I have not personally used these books in some cases. So if you have, I would love to hear from you. Please leave a comment about your experience, what I got wrong about them or any other methods, and how your opinion differs from mine, or just expanding on my knowledge of these methods. So the first one of these is Wonder Keys. It's in the kind of I've used it, but not really. I haven't used this specific edition of this book, so I cannot talk in detail about what that is like. I can only look at it as a, like, I can see the pedagogy going on, I can see what's happening, here's what I think is going on kind of feeling. What I have used is, originally when I first started teaching preschoolers, I used their old version of the Wonder Keys series. So it used to be just this preschooler method, these three, I think there were three levels of the original books. And then from there, they developed a whole regular method as well. And a new edition of the preschool books. So I'll briefly cover the preschool books because that's what I know more. And then we'll talk about this regular method. This is the primer level I have in front of me. The preschool books, I'm so grateful to, because they got me my start teaching preschoolers. If there was nothing out there for teaching preschoolers, I don't know if I would have had the confidence to start it in the beginning because it was such a foreign thing to me. It's not when I started piano, I hadn't done it, you know, all of that. As time went on, I grew to feel like I needed more piano playing in my preschool lessons, and that my students were capable of playing more than they were. Loved all the games. As you know, I love games. And I created my own to expand on them and all of that. But that was the reason for me that I didn't use that on an ongoing basis, that I don't still use it. I find that still to be true with the newer editions. I know they're different, but they still don't quite fit with how I like preschoolers to play at the piano. So that's my only quibble with it, but it's a great place to learn how to teach preschoolers. And there are absolutely diehard fans out there who love the preschool series. More power to you. You go ahead. It's just not quite for me. It's not the perfect fit for my studio anymore. That being said, what we're looking at here is the regular series. So this is Primer Book 2, which I think is interesting. So they split the primer level into multiple levels. Wonder Keys, from what I've seen of various levels of it, focuses on a pretty gentle pace, which can be great to have for some students, and injecting lots of fun and storytelling. So where I think Wonder Keys can be really great, the main method this is you have a student who really loves to use their imagination, maybe don't practice the most, and so they need that slower pace, but they really get involved with the storytelling aspects and the fun and the characters and all of that stuff, and that brings the piano to life for them. That's great. My quibble with this particular book in front of me is that it uses middle C position. We've already talked about this, I won't go on about it, but it's not my favorite to be in middle C position for too long. It doesn't get stuck in it. It does swap between C position and this and that. And I love that the books include activities and games, ideas and different exercises to get teachers thinking in different ways, especially if teachers haven't taught in that way before. I think it can be a great place to learn these skills of making lessons really fun and interactive and play-based for students. For me, there's a couple of things that have stopped me diving into it. And again, you can correct me about these things. If you've used it more than me and you disagree, or maybe you just like these things about it, that's fine. For me, a lot of Wonder Keys materials focus too much on note names, like learning individual notes on the staff. Not the most of any method by any means. I've seen much worse, or better, as the case may be in your mind. But yeah, a little bit too much focus on individual notes and note names rather than intervals, although they do cover intervals a bit. And I don't have the need for this slow of a pace as much in my studio. But again, if you do, I think that's a great fit. Next one is Me and My Piano. This is another one like John Thompson that just, you know, some people are diehard for this one and they've never used anything else and they won't even consider it. So it must be doing something right. This is in the category of kind of, but not really use this, because I remember using it in my early days of teaching. But I also do not remember anything about the experience at the time. The first book I used in my early teaching, I do not have with me now. It's called Gibbity F and ACE. Some of you will know it. It's a classic. That's what my teacher at the time suggested I use with my first students. So that's what I did. But I know I used this one as well. I just can't remember in detail that experience because it was like 20 years ago. So what is my impression of this book? Well, it starts fairly early on to get students on the staff. So it's not a big pre-reading one. There's a little bit of pre-reading in the beginning. And then it focuses on single staves for most of this part one book, which, as I've mentioned, I don't love that much, but it doesn't bother me enormously. The music is fairly simple and fairly traditional, I would say, sort of like folk tunes or tunes in that style if they're composed for the book. The thing that would really hold me back in this book, and maybe you think it's great, so, you know, tell me if you do, but the notation's really small for a beginner book, and it's not what we're accustomed to seeing in newer method books. And I do find it makes a difference for students being able to see the patterns clearly when they're not used to looking at the systems of lines. Having big notation really does help them to get used to that. So I really prefer bigger notation. The other thing I don't absolutely love is the use of finger numbers, as in too many. In my view, of course, you can just wipe them out. I mean, that if that was the only problem, something majorly alarming about this, but it's not something that would stand out as like, wow, I have to use it. It's just okay. Next, we have Bastian Piano Basics. I just have a copy of this. I have never used it with a student. So, you know, that's where I'm coming from here. It's just my impressions. What I like about it is that it moves around a good bit. There's a good richness in the music, a little bit John Thompson-y in that way, like in the style of music that it includes. A lot of it is in C position, but it does have a decent variety to it. And it's a fairly quick pace in getting students to play hands together and all of that stuff. There are two things that bug me about this that probably would bother no one else. Number one is the printing style, crispness, quality. I don't think that's showing up on camera as much, but it's slightly fuzzy. It's kind of that old style of printing. And obviously that shouldn't be a deal breaker. It shouldn't really bother me, but it does. I don't like it. I just like things to look crisp and nice and be digitally printed. This looks like litho printing, maybe. And yeah, probably no one else would even notice, but I don't love it. The other little insignificant thing, which you won't even see on camera, is the style of the time signatures. Basically, I'm talking about the musical typesetting. Just don't love the style of it. It's not something you see very often, so it feels a bit weird as an introduction to music. But again, nothing that would make or break a method. There's nothing really wrong with any of the pieces in here. It starts with pre-reading. It goes to some single stave stuff and then pretty quickly puts them on the grand staff and gets them to put their hands together. So as reading material, not bad at all. Now we have Alfred's Basic Piano Library. This is something I'm sort of aware of in periphery, but I'm going to be honest, pretty ignorant about the real difference here, because to me, it's not a method that particularly appealed to me at any time, so I haven't looked in detail. But I know people are either very strong on Alfred's Basic versus Alfred Premier, right? I don't have Premiere with me here. I know some people are like, well, it's totally different and it's amazing, or it's terrible and Basic's amazing. I'm gonna hold up my hands and say, I don't know, guys. I'm only gonna talk about Basic for this video. So this is level 1A of Alfred's Basic. It starts with a good chunk of pre-reading with some pretty big notation and some focus on white keys and lots of stuff you would want for a beginner of like average-ish age, 6, 7, 8. Then it goes on to the staff and the notation is kind of small, not the smallest we've seen, but kind of small, especially the note size. If that sounds a bit weird because staff size and note size are related, but with the style of the typography that the notes are small. Again, if you don't care about this stuff, fair enough. It's just the kind of thing that I care about. But what I don't love when we get on the staff is this right here. Position C. It's even calling it position C. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with position-based methods, actually, per se, because a lot of method books do this as a way to get students going. There's always some crutch in every method. There's no such thing as one that's like, you know, doesn't have some compromise somewhere, because otherwise we would just give them impossible music to play and say, go, you know, that's not a method book. So there's always going to be something as a way to make things easier. For instance, in my own method, Piano Paint Box, I give them keyboard maps to tell them where to put their hands, because I don't care in the beginning at those stages if they can name the notes on the staff and find them. So I'm actually helping them figure out where they are so that they can focus on the reading and the playing. In this one, they're focusing on positions as a way to make reading a little bit easier, but really calling it out as position and focusing too much on position tends to lead to students with this technique where they just get stuck on the keys. Have you met any of these students? I have, and it's really a hard thing to get students out of. We actually made a whole concept collection for Vibrant Music Teaching, which is a book where I invite composers to compose on a specific different theme. We made one in the past to get students unstuck from positions, like for composers to specifically compose pieces to help teachers with this. Because when students get really stuck, they will like, you know, even to reach up to a note, they'll really want to get back. They feel so safe in this spot. And that's not how we play piano. So I do have a bit of a problem when we focus too much on positions. But I like a lot of other things about this book. I like that they do focus on intervals, that they talk about that, and that they progress in a way that would help you teach intervals. I just don't like that we're getting stuck in this position and then that position. The music itself is good, if a little old-fashioned, if I'm being honest. Like, good for a student who's not going to be bothered by that. And many students wouldn't. Many students just be like, this is a nice little tune, that's fine. But some would feel a bit like, oh, this is a bit, I don't know what way they would put it, but they would just have this feeling if it was a bit dull or a bit traditional or something. Again, that can be a plus. But for some students, it wouldn't be. They do introduce accidentals in this book, book 1A. So that's nice and early on. What I don't see in the first book at all, and again, I could have missed it because I don't use this method, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't see any quavers or eighth notes to those of you in the US in the first book, which I do like those to be introduced nice and early. Some teachers disagree, but that's just something to note. The last one, these have really been in no particular order other than keeping series from a particular publisher together. But the last one I have for you today is Hal Leonard, Student Piano Library Piano Lessons. Not sure how to say that title in a way that makes it sound like one title. And this is book one. This one has a fairly gentle pace from what I've seen in my experience with it. It has a lot of pre-reading pieces in book one. Nothing wrong with that, just making a note of it. And then it progresses to the grand staff, fairly big notation, which I prefer, but all the way to the end of book one, there's no playing hands together. So it's a grand staff, but it's generally like a melody between two hands. Passing from one hand to the other hand is how it's set up. Now, that makes for a really steady and fairly straightforward reading progression. It does mean that, especially an older student, but some younger students as well, won't feel like they're playing big, impressive pieces. They won't feel like they're playing real music in some cases. They'll feel like they're playing a simple little beginner piece, because that's what they're doing. I will note here, because I've noted it about the others, that again, this uses middle C position, so the thumbs are sharing C. There may be some pieces that are not, but all the ones I looked at were sharing C, so just to note that. Again, not something I prefer, especially for a good chunk of a book, but it may be what you love. So there you have it. That's 17 method books that I had on hand today to show you. There are many others that I've used as well. I would love to hear your thoughts about your favorite method books, ones you hate, but please be kind and respectful to the publisher and the creator when leaving comments about the ones you don't like. These were all thoughtfully and carefully produced by someone, so I hope my tone reflected that as I talked about each one, and I hope your tone will too in the comments. But I would love to hear your thoughts, and contradict me, tell me what I missed, tell me what I got wrong. I'd love to hear your thoughts. We do also have piece pointers courses for My First Piano Adventures, Piano Safari, and Piano Paint Box that I've talked about today in the membership at vibrantmusicteaching.com. These courses talk about each piece in turn in a whole book, or a whole several books in these cases, to give you detailed ideas of how to teach it, how to practice it, what to watch out for with students. So if you want to check those out, they're in the membership at vibrantmusicteaching.com. If you ever get overwhelmed by all the different teacher training options out there, Vibrant Music Teaching is the place for you. We nickname our members flamingos because they're masters of balancing all of the things and making it all work in a way that isn't overwhelming. We have tools to help you do that inside Vibrant Music Teaching. So go to vmt.ninja and sign up today.